Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, a shocker to no one, payments is obviously a global business, but maybe your organization doesn't conduct global business today, but the industry is moving in a direction to standardize payments across the globe. Now, on Payments Journal, we talk quite a bit about real-time payments, and for good reason. But when it comes to adoption in the US, how are we compared to the rest of the world, and why does that matter? Also, what does this mean for organizations who conduct businesses domestically or globally? Well, to answer these questions and more, I'm joined by Mark Ranta, who is Alacrity's Payments Practice Lead, and Sarah Grotta, Mercator Advisor Group's Director of the Debit and Alternative Products Advisory Service. So there's certainly a lot to unpack on today's episode, so without any further delays, let's start the show. So Mark and Sarah, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode, as we're really going to be taking a deep dive into kind of looking at this mass adoption of real-time payments here, particularly in the U.S. Now, Sarah, I want to start off today's conversation with you because I know that you've been working with Alacrity here in terms of conducting a survey, taking a real look at real-time adoption here. So perhaps maybe you could kind of start off today's conversation kind of unpacking the reports and some of the findings, and then we've also got this really interesting chart that's taking a look at payments technology modernization efforts here. And perhaps, Sarah, maybe you could unpack that chart in particular for our audience. And for those of you who are following along on paymentsjournal.com, you're going to be able to view this chart that we're unpacking here in the article below. So, Sarah, perhaps if you could start us off.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. So, you know, we really did have a great opportunity recently to work with Alacrity on a survey where we were able to ask executives about their recent approaches to things like real-time payments. And one of the earliest questions we asked in the survey is the one that we have displayed here. And this was really about, you know, where they felt how they were doing and progressing on their payments modernization. So real quickly about the survey itself, we did this in late March of this year. So the responses that we received from these executives really were from the perspective of folks who had been through about a full year of dealing with the implications of the pandemic. And we talked to about 100 senior level bankers, and we should note that about 19% of those were from community banks and credit unions. So we had a really good mix of perspectives based on institution size and perspective. So, you know, what we find here is, I guess, not entirely surprising, but we found that 80% of the bank and credit union executives found that the pace of their payments modernization really picked up in direct response to the pandemic. So this may have been a sheer just reaction out of necessity to, you know, serve customers as branch locations were closed and as more automation was needed in the back office, you know, when workers weren't really there to do their sort of day-to-day work. And, you know, for some financial institutions, this meant that they really focused their resources on modernization plans that they had already had in place, but were speeding up their efforts. And some took the opportunity to reprioritize payments modernization, maybe over some of the other activities they thought they were going to accomplish. You know, I think that's one of the things that the pandemic did was to really shine that bright light on those areas that really needed to be enhanced. And I think what came out of this too is really interesting and maybe something we can discuss here is, you know, what payment modernization really means from one institution to the next could be different. It might mean, you know, from one organization, they're going to move their contactless card issuance plans forward more quickly, or maybe at the complete other end of the spectrum, it's implementing a transition to a new, more modern, more responsive platform that really can successfully manage this flurry of new payment types and functions and form factors that we're seeing hit the market.
Yeah, I think Sarah nailed on it. I think it's not a surprise. The pace, sitting on where we sit in the ecosystem and talking to the FIs we talk to, the pace certainly had to increase. There was a necessity that bore through the pandemic that consumers and businesses needed to transact digitally. You couldn't have those in-person experiences, similar to everything else in our life, and going to the store, ordering things online. So we saw this shift to digital like we've never seen before. They weren't new trends. They just accelerated trends that are already in existence. And I think when you look at payments modernization, you also have to keep in context of where we are at an industry level. 2017 feels kind of like a long time ago because of the last year and the pandemic and how slow the clock moved through 2020. But reality is that the TCH launched in 2017. So we're really only 4 years into this journey on the real-time payment side. Many of the institutions going into the pandemic were looking at it, and it was still in its early follower stage. So we were just kind of at the onset of volume growing and really seeing the network mature. Included in the last year, we had the announcement from the Federal Reserve and the FedNow pilot program, as well as some of the ecosystem partnerships, which Alacrity is a part of. And looking at that, you really see this need to start thinking about this more holistically. And that idea, folks that we were talking with in 2019 into 2020, were really taking a wait and see approach, knowing that it was important, maybe further down on the priority list. But 2020 really shifted it up, as Sarah mentioned, really moved it up on that priority list to not only look at, but to start actually acting upon. So when we see this, that first answer to the survey, the pace really has increased, but a lot of that has to do with the actual industry increasing as well. It's also a looking at where we sit at the U.S. Faster Payments Council and looking at the use cases of the faster payments has really proliferated, whether it's the TCH and partnering with ADP and Paychex for payroll, or if you're talking about the reverse debit network and Visa and MasterCard, and looking at the gig economy payouts from folks like Uber or Grubhub, you're really seeing the use cases explode too. So looking at, as volume is growing on this, a lot more banks are saying, hey, I can't wait anymore. I need to get on the system and I need to start looking at how do I connect to it and kind of accelerate those plans.
Let me follow up on that too. So we talk about payments modernization, and I think in the same breath, we talk about real-time payments. And so do you think that, the advent and the growth of real-time payments may be just as impactful to getting financial institutions to think about payment modernization as the pandemic was, or maybe even more?
Yeah, it's funny. We do a presentation that has kind of the breakdown of two different eras. We're in between the analog banking era, where the payment systems that were, came to life in the 1970s with Fedwire and the ACH processes kind of were dominant. Everything was batch-based. Everything ran on a 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. local time schedule. And you had what we colloquially call banker's hours. That shift is moving to this digital experience expectation, 24/7, 365, always on, always available. Those two models don't work well together. It's that having a batch-based system, and if you're trying to transact and make a person-to-person payment from your mobile phone at 10 o'clock at night because you're finally out at the bar again with friends, if you're in the older system, that's not possible. That's why all of these experiences in the fintech landscape really popped on the scene to fill that void and need, because the bank systems weren't physically capable of handling that 24/7 nature. So things that are being driven on that, always on, always available, you get down to the core payment systems and the money movement at the epicenter. We're at that first time in our experience to really have these new experiences, because they weren't possible before now. So I think that in the backdrop of real time, it's not just the real time system, it's really the always on, always available system. And I know that the two kind of go hand in hand, Sarah, but it's really a difference between the legacy systems and the new systems.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Now, one of the things, Mark, that I want to kind of point out, or one of the words that you said there that I think is certainly very interesting, is the word journey there. Because I certainly think that we're seeing a lot of financial institutions kind of starting out on this real-time payments journey here. But real-time payments itself is not isolated to the United States. It's certainly a global global shift that's going on here. So I'm curious then, maybe Mark, you could kind of tell us, like, you know, from your standpoint at Alacrity, is the US kind of like a market leader when it comes to real-time payments, or are we a laggard? Like, where do we kind of fit in the global scheme of things?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, we're a laggard. And when you look globally, there's, you know, 50 plus systems live today. And I can't ramble them all off the top of my head, but looking to the Asian markets, the APAC markets, the European market and the LATAM markets, a lot of these real-time payment systems have been around for 10 plus years. I mean, heck, the UK Faster Payments is entering its 2.0 release. So in terms of where we are in the market and looking at, you know, who's doing this well, I would point all the financial institutions in the US to look abroad. I think looking into the APAC region and looking at what use cases their ecosystems are using is a good place to start. I mean, from where we sit, we know that the US market is more complex and significantly more financial institutions and more pieces to the puzzle than anyone else. And that kind of explains a way to a point why we are where we are. But when you think about that, really faster payments and payments modernization and digital transformation, you know, I really look at the Asian market. I look at folks like DBS. I look at some of the Japanese banks and look at the experiences that they've been able to layer upon these systems that they've had time to play around with. And looking at those best practices and understanding how they have transformed their business, not just from a technology standpoint, but really from an internal, you know, a business standpoint and mentality standpoint, to really deliver these digital first digital experiences that are always on, always available, and in your pocket as a consumer. So thinking about that, you know, as I said at the start, we're only 4 years into this real-time payments journey. And one of those years was a pandemic-ridden 2020. So really we're on 3+ years. The infrastructure that we have within our industry is 40 years old. I mean, the ACH network and the wire systems, they were released in the 70s before I was born. So you're looking at these experiences that all of us have grown up with and around in the ecosystem, and all the infrastructure at the FIs have to compete with that. So being able to look at that and where to start the journey, it's daunting when you have systems in the back office that still run on COBOL, but these digital experiences are demanding, and we're seeing more and more fintechs and more technology vendors really come in and start to enter into the space that was once peripheral to the bank and now directly targeting bank-like products. So for me, again, I would look at the external and look at the Asian market and what's happening in Europe and what they're doing in the open banking space. But really thinking about, you know, these bank-like experiences and what the threat could be if you don't act and don't move forward.
Yeah, I think there was a point where someone could say, okay, yes, our payment systems maybe aren't real time, maybe they don't settle real time. I don't care. It meets the needs of my customers. But I think because of the pressure that we're seeing from other countries and what they have developed, some of that is starting to sort of, if you will, leak over into the US. And now we're sort of, you know, the laggards, the slow point, and we can't ignore it anymore. It's just too big. And at some point it's going to be detrimental to particularly to things like international trade, but also, you know, even more immediately as some of those solutions start to come in, I think particularly through fintech innovations, you know, we could find ourselves a little flat-footed.
Yeah. And one of the things that I think is really kind of interesting here is because, you know, Mark, you brought up the infrastructure part of it. So, I mean, let's kind of dive into the implementation of real-time payments here. And, you know, I think that there's really kind of two predominantly main types of implementation, really, when we could think about it. There's the cloud-based and then there's in-house. Now, when we talk about kind of legacy systems, we're typically kind of talking about that being the in-house systems kind of that you were referring to there running still on COBOL there. But then when you talk about payments modernization, most advocate from moving away from the legacy systems in favor of kind of the cloud-based approach here. So Mark, from your perspective, why is that really the case?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We've been talking about cloud in the industry for the entire 15 years I've been a part of it, and really looking at where the conversation started, I want to say it was like 85, 90% of the financial institutions kind of like, we're never going to put our infrastructure on the cloud. That's ridiculous. Who would ever do something like that? But as we've evolved and kind of technology and Moore's law has taken over, the cloud and the stigmatism of public cloud and private cloud and what we looked at in terms of that as a deployment option has kind of dissipated and dissipated to the point where even the largest financial institutions in the globe are running applications on the cloud today. Now, not to say they're going to move their core to the cloud right away, but realistically, I think that that argument of on-prem, built, deployed versus cloud really is kind of in the rear view. I think even up to those largest institutions, they've realized the value that the cloud brings and the idea of not having to think about these large investments that have to be made. Because when you talk about infrastructure, you talk about tech debt, and a lot of the tech debt that comes along with these legacy systems kind of has been the inhibitor to advancing and innovating. Some of it's obviously necessary. You have to do patches. You have to do these things. But when you do it on an on-prem deployed system, the cost is just significantly higher. So the dollars and cents just stop making sense at some point. And when you think about that debate, I mean, again, for me, I think it's officially been called. I think cloud offerings are the way to go. And when you talk about cloud and leveraging the tools and the services and thinking about modern microservice architected deployed solutions and open APIs, they're tailor fit for the cloud because the cloud can scale with you alongside you as you grow. So on these things and areas, I mean, as I said, we're at the beginning of this real-time payments journey. It's built to scale with you as you need to grow as volumes grow. So you could look at a very pinpoint use case or a very specific customer segment that you're trying to innovate or deploy for. The cloud is the perfect answer to that because you don't have to put these really high levels of investment in place to deploy. And when you don't have to do that, you don't have to go through these massive business cases and all the things that we as bankers look at in the industry and kind of all that old model of thinking about projects and thinking about how doing things, you kind of can put it into a box and move it to the side and move forward to innovate and think about how you meet your clients' needs versus how do I make money on this? That will come. And I think that that's the biggest thing when we're looking at use cases with faster payments. A lot of folks are trying to look at this as how do I create revenue or protect the revenue that I have from this wire system today? They're asking the wrong question for me. I think when you're looking at it, you really need to be thinking about this as what innovative service can I create that creates a net new revenue stream for me? Don't think about it as how do I create revenue from the payment? I think all of us in the industry need to kind of acknowledge the value of the payments rapidly moving towards zero. We're removing friction. Friction was what we were able to charge for. By moving to the central real-time infrastructure, most of the friction goes away. So most of those toll booths that sat on the old road that people were collecting along the way disappear. And I think that's a good thing. Honestly, I think that's a good thing for the entire industry. But again, I think looking at that with the cloud, you don't have to think about it in those revenue terms to replace what you're missing. You can think about it in innovation terms.
Yeah, Mark, one of the things, I mean, that just as you were speaking there, that's kind of coming to me is just kind of the rate of change, right? So when we kind of take a look at like legacy systems, you kind of saw like potentially a slower rate of change versus with a cloud-based system and kind of the fluidity that it offers, as you kind of particularly brought up in terms of API integration here. I think as you start to see more organizations push more of their offerings towards the cloud or using more cloud-like services, that you're going to see the rate of change within the payments industry expedite here. So that really kind of then brings me to my next question here. So, you know, I think that this year has really begun to highlight for a lot of people just how complex the payments ecosystem is. You know, and there's certainly organizations that are offering more payment facilitation services and new organizations that are really looking to disrupt norms and kind of gain that market share. And this has led some financial institutions to a bit of a complex predicament where they can either A, keep building upon the legacy systems, kind of knowing that the, and I'm using air quotes here, foundation was not necessarily built for what they're looking to accomplish, or they can create kind of a new foundation that's focused on payments modernization. So Mark, let's start with you and get your take on this predicament and what direction you think financial institutions should go in.
Let me start by saying I don't envy the position that many banks find themselves in. It's an extremely difficult spot because, as I said, we're dealing with two eras of payments. You're really dealing with the stuff that was built and perfected over 40 years and the new stuff that's coming and we know is going to be the epicenter of payments and banking in the future. And for better or worse, the banks that are in existence today have to acknowledge both and they have to plan for both. I think that the cloud discussion kind of alleviates some of the forward-looking piece because, again, there's infrastructure and investments that have been made over those 40 years, some recently, that quite frankly, you can't just rip and replace. The idea of knocking down the house all the way down to the foundation and repouring the foundation while still having clients is just, that's not realistic. The idea of rip and replace, I was at Sibos a few years ago with the pronouncement that rip and replace is dead. The idea is really to start to stand up and do coexistence and leverage the cloud as that infrastructure to start building the net new, test it out, get used to it, roll up your sleeves and let your teams handle it to understand what those new operating models need to look like at the bank. I think when you think about it, a lot of the folks in positions of power and positions of, you know, senior leadership and management at the banks likely went through some large system migrations, you know, once or twice in their career. So, you know, looking into the 90s and the 2000s, those are kind of the two, maybe into the 2010s, maybe three, if you're lucky, you've gone through three pretty large rip and replace kind of experiences. Those are battle scars. And I acknowledge that those systems were not easy to replace, but there has to be some level of faith in the technology advancements that we've made. And again, this goes back to the cloud discussion. I think looking at it differently and thinking about these projects, it's not a full rip and replace. And I think looking at leveraging and making sure that those systems that you stand up to do those batch-based processes still need to do them. There's plenty of reason to keep those going for the interim, but laying that new foundation or laying out the new services and rolling them into market for the new rails, looking at TCH and looking at things like Zelle and FedNow and Visa Direct and MasterCard Send and, you know, whatever else is going to come online in the next few years, you have to have the infrastructure in place to handle that because there is going to be client demand and there's going to be use cases that make sense to use that for. So looking at kind of the spaghetti systems that you've created of the past and have worked around, to your point, Ryan, like building and do I keep on adding to the Frankenstein nature of the spaghetti, or do I start trying to figure out what spaghetti I can take out of the picture? What can I start moving? How can I start moving and innovating side by side and then slowly move it from coexistence to replacement? I think it's going to be a slow migration off of these older systems to the newer ones. And again, a lot of it has to come down from the difference between the batch-based systems, which were really meant to run overnight and kind of had these windows where they were open, but then closed. And I think looking at the future of this is really those single message payments that are always on and always available. And that 24/7 nature and 365 of operating is something that the banks are going to have to get used to. So you should start small and you should look at doing specific features and functions versus the full idea of starting new. Now, if I was starting a new bank, that's a whole different story. I think you'd start directly on these services and not have any of that stuff underneath that you'd have to worry about. But realistically, I think that's where we are.
I think a whole bunch of financial institutions just sighed a big sigh of relief to hear that, you know, rip and replace isn't absolutely a necessity. So, but I do think, you know, those who don't start to plan for moving some of their payment infrastructure into the cloud onto more dynamic and flexible platforms are putting themselves really in a bit of danger. I don't mean to be overly dramatic here, but quite frankly, I think that the industry could start to see consolidation and that consolidation to be a direct result of those who have very old technology and aren't making the investments, because I think it's going to end up being a point of survival.
Yeah, and Sarah, when we're sitting in the meetings at the U.S. Faster Payments Council, or we're having conversations. The big term that you hear now regularly is interoperability. And I laugh a little bit because the idea of interoperability from a payments perspective, didn't need to happen. ACH is significantly different than wire. And those two payments were the underpinning of everything we had. But now that we're looking at kind of these new systems, think about it from a Zelle perspective and how it's starting to come together with TCH's RTP and what the Visa Direct and MasterCard Send messages and reverse debit payments start to look significantly like a TCH RTP transaction or what the Fed now is expecting their transactions to look like. So this idea of interoperability, if you have big monolithic applications, you have big systems that only were meant to handle that one type, interoperability is not even something you can talk about. And so as we're starting to have these conversations at a market level, you can't really have interoperability without systems upgrade and modernization, because at that point, you're talking like two different languages. You'd have to sit there with a translator in between the two of you to have the conversation. And everyone knows with translation, things get lost. And that's what lost in translation is, the fear that you would have in systems that aren't speaking the same language. But now that you're in this real-time world in the 24/7 nature, that ISO 20022 message is really a key piece of this. And again, that has to come down to the transformation piece. It has to be at the central language that you're speaking as a bank. And that wasn't available 40 years ago. So to think that you can do all this on the periphery without thinking it all the way through and transforming, you're going to be left behind on these transformation journeys.
Yeah, no, if we could, I'd like to kind of wrap up our today's conversation here with kind of some action items, if we could. So, you know, as we discussed, compared to the rest of the globe, the US is kind of really lagging behind when it comes to real-time payments adoptions. But in some aspect, that's not really a huge surprise, kind of considering the complexity of the market. But that being said, real-time payments is not a fad, and organizations really need to, think about kind of their real-time payments journey, if you will, here. So, Mark, you know, what would your recommendations be for financial institutions who are looking to really kind of build out that real-time payments roadmap?
Yeah, I think it's important to remind people you don't need to start with a rip and replace mindset. I know we talked about it, but don't start there. That's not really where we want you to start. Think about this more as innovate, adapt your processes, and then long-term migrate. So don't think of it as a single project. You can't. You need to think about it as a journey. It's a long journey. And quite frankly, one we're going to be on for the next 5 to 10 years. There's going to be a lot of change. And what we're seeing today is only going to accelerate. So I don't want to scare people from that sense, but you got to think about this as a journey. It's not a one-stop project and you're going to be done and then you can reset the clock for 40 more years. That's realistically, that's not what we're going to see. But more importantly, don't wait. I think a lot of people, and where this conversation started, was that most banks have sped up their transformation plans. And that's a good thing. Again, I think we're at the beginning of this journey and we're moving past the early adopters into the fast followers phase. And I think that fast followers phase is going to rapidly move to mass adoption phase. So all of these services and real-time payments is really going to start hitting its stride. And I think that CAGR that we're seeing from TCH and as FedNow comes online, these payments are only going to increase in share of transactions. And again, it's starting at a small point, but that is going to rapidly change over the next 5 years. So don't wait. You need to think about that. The market's speeding up, and play with the services. Go online, download an app and see how you can interact with them. There's plenty of closed loop systems and applications that sit on top of our banks today that you can play with to understand these better. Roll up your sleeves and try them out internally. Thinking about with the cloud-based service, as I said before, think about these as being able to look at individual use cases that you could innovate in and around and then expand within the FI. So you can start with something as simple as receive only. Start to understand what that 24/7 network connectivity looks like. Understand what operationally is going to be required, seeing money coming in. And then you can move to the money out scenarios. You can move to being able to service your members and your customers and your businesses with money out services. And at that point, you're in the digital transformation journey. You're well on the track.
Excellent. Well, I think we'll leave it on that positive note there. So Mark, Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about real-time payment adoption. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Can't wait.
Thanks, Ryan.